The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
I'm going to call Phil and hurt herself. And this guy kind of got into a karate thing. And I said, well, you think you can kick my ass? And I remember I grabbed a knife. I do remember that portion, taking a knife from Charlie. And to be honest, after that, I don't remember. Except I'm standing there and there's all kind of stuff around. And
what kind of stuff?
Blood and stuff around. You know, I hate to say this, but this is not medical. I'm sorry.
Superior Court of California, County of Los Angeles, in the matter of the people of the state of California versus Orenthal James Simpson, case number BA097211. We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Nicole Brown Simpson, a human being, as charged in count.
All right, those two pieces of audio deserve a little explication. The first one was from OJ in that bizarre money grab in 2005. The book was originally If I Did It, and then the Goldman family sued because he wasn't allowed to make money off of his civil offense slash crime. And the name got changed to Lost Confession, I think. That bizarre money grab in which OJ said, well, I didn't do it, but if I did, here's how it went, which is distasteful, doesn't begin to describe how immoral and horrifying it is as an exercise. Can you picture any sentient human being doing that if indeed someone they loved had been murdered by somebody else? It's inconceivable. Then that second piece of audio was obviously the jury announcement. Live in the Oprah Winfrey studio, as her show that day was devoted to. They were watching it live, and all the folks there, I'm guessing predominantly black folks, were cheering like crazy that OJ was let off. So in the wake of the death of the murdering football star yesterday, there's been a lot of looking back and reminiscing. Is that the right word about the slow speed chase and the trial and the various personalities involved, which I've got to admit, it's kind of irresistible just because it was all so crazy. It's distasteful, too, because it was distasteful at the time. And as Jack pointed out earlier, and we've been talking about since OJ croaked, that celebrity infamy, the best way to explain it, I guess, is that the line between famous and infamous disappeared. As long as you were widely known, you were celebrated and joked about and could make a lot of money and that sort of thing. Famous for being famous. And that ushered in the period of celebrity journalism and drama journalism, newsotainment, which has always existed, of course. But the big, hard news organizations went in full for it, especially broadcast news. And I think that's wrought some significant changes that are with us today, and not for the good. Although I, my orientation, honestly, is I want to deal with what is and figure out how to fix it. As opposed to, I mean, it's interesting. It's instructive to know when this stuff all started. But what do we do about it now? How does somebody seeking the truth seek the truth in the modern media landscape? I find that a more interesting question. But anyway, one of the personalities of that era, who is now unfortunately gone, Norm Macdonald, comedian, he was the weekend update guy for Saturday Night Live for a number of years. And Norm had a weird sense of humor, and sometimes the best part of it was how uncomfortably unfunny his jokes were. And I know a lot of people scratch their head, Norm Macdonald, and say, why did people think he's some sort of comedy genius? Well, I think it's because he was half a comedian and half a, I'm going to say what nobody else is thinking, what everybody else is thinking, but nobody has the guts to say. I'm going to say it, and I'm going to smile at you while I say it. And Norm took this delight at that sort of truth-telling. And if you're familiar with the story, he was bitterly critical of OJ because he hacked those two people to death. And the head of NBC at that point was a good friend of OJ Simpson's and kept telling Norm that he had to stop doing those jokes or he would get sacked. And Norm Macdonald, God bless him, said, okay, thanks for the input there. Appreciate it. Yeah. And then the next week on Saturday Night Live, he went right back to it. I've always respected him for that. Why don't we just roll a couple of his jokes, Michael, and from the era, keeping in mind he'd been told he would be fired if he did this.
According to retailers, the most popular Halloween mask this year is O.J. Simpson. And the most popular Halloween greeting is, I'll kill you and that guy who's bringing over your glasses, or treat. And the Pope came out with a book this week, which contains a series of essays examining faith and morality in today's secular world and the changing role of the Catholic Church as it approaches the 21st century. The book is entitled, God Himself Told Me That O.J. Is Guilty. In his book, O.J. Simpson says that he would have taken a bullet or stood in front of a train for Nicole. Man, I'm going to tell you, that is some bad luck when the one guy who would have died for you kills you. That's probably... You don't get worse luck than that. Judge Ito was interviewed this week by a local TV station in Los Angeles, asked by the interviewer if it was appropriate for a supposedly impartial judge to be on TV with his case still pending. Ito said, maybe not, but how appropriate is it to kill your ex-wife?
Wow. And there are a couple more. I was just reminded I got sucked into, I think it was the New York Times had a, all the principals in the O.J. Simpson trial. Where are they now? And I kind of enjoyed, you know, Chris Darden, Marcia Clark. What are they up to? They both did some teaching, writing. They wrote mystery novels, which crime novels, which I'm sure they'd be reasonably good at, probably with ghostwriters. And, you know, some of the lawyers have passed, some have not. But they went with like the Brown family members who testified and the Goldman family members. And I took no joy nor interest in that. I know where they are. They're still grieving for the people they loved who were murdered senselessly by a maniac, by a wife abuser. I don't need to know who, where they are and what they're doing. They deserve their privacy. Leave them alone for the love of God. A couple more Norm jokes.
Well, O.J. Simpson's lawyers stopped feuding this week, finally. The Dream Team, F. Lee Bailey and Robert Shapiro, were able to put aside their differences and express their admiration for each other after O.J. threatened to cut their heads off. This week at the O.J. Simpson trial, the infamous bloody glove was finally introduced into evidence. And O.J. didn't help his case any by blurting out, "There it is, I've been looking all over for that thing." Dismissed Simpson juror Jeanette Harris revealed in interviews this week that the jury is torn by dissension and is already divided into two camps. Those who think he is guilty and those who are really, really stupid.
One of my favorite topics, and I won't bore you with it at length, is the role of humor in a society. Because it's for a lot more than making us laugh. After a quick word from our friends at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system we recommend, named the best home security system for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report. Newsweek awarded it best customer service in home security. See, the thing is, the system blankets your home in protection with sensors, fires, fire detectors, they even flood if that's a risk for you. If it's not, don't get it. You customize the system for yourself. Plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. Okay, well, who's watching those cameras? With a great privacy protection, the 24/7 professional monitors are doing it, and it's less than $1 a day, which is half of what the traditional systems cost. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. Simply Safe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera, warning them that they're being recorded and police are on their way. With no contract and a 60-day money-back guarantee, why not try Simply Safe risk-free? Simply Safe has given us 20% off for y'all. Any new Simply Safe system, when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring, just visit simplysafe.com/Armstrong. That's simplysafe.com/Armstrong. There's no safe like Simply Safe. So, it, you know, not to pull back the curtain too thoroughly, but one of the great things about humor, and Mark Twain could explain this to you, or Hunter S. Thompson could have, or Norm Macdonald could have, is that often when you cloak something in humor, it's like that spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down. I mean, because Norm's punchlines there were uniformly horrifying. And people laughed. People laugh for a lot of different reasons. When you're trying to, like, destroy the career of somebody who occasionally makes jokes, like us, because we had people try to do this multiple times, try to ruin our careers, they quote a joke as if it's a statement, a serious, brow-furrowed statement, when indeed it's a different way to deliver a truth. And Norm was observing all the hoopla and the money being made and the ratings being gathered through the whole OJ trial circus, which stretched on for 9 months. I had forgotten that. But Norm felt like it was his moral duty, I guess, through all of that hoopla and for-profit celebration of what was happening, to remind us all over and over again, this guy committed a couple of brutal murders. Innocent until proven guilty. I get it. Norm Macdonald wasn't legal system. He was just, you know, a guy. But I think that's an important role, and I'm glad he did it. So anyway, here's to you, Norm Macdonald. Enough OJ. We're on to the IRS's brilliant new plan for you to just give them all your tax information, and they'll figure out your taxes for you. What's your reaction to that? Yeah, yeah, so is everybody's. More on that to come.
Armstrong and Getty.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun,
and I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I got a riddle for you. What happens when you hire the products of America's colleges and universities who have taught their little charges that there's only one correct opinion and anybody who doesn't hold it is evil and should be defeated and brought to their knees? What happens if you hire those people? The answer to the riddle is you get a hell of a mess. New York Times is dealing with that. They've got a newsroom full of the woke, and it's turned into an internal war as the old school is trying to say, no, we're a, and granted, I know how biased the New York Times is, but they're trying to say, hey, no, we're not an advocacy group here. We're not here to lobby for one particular thing. And the youngsters are throwing a fit. So more on that to come. Elizabeth Warren, I think, is underappreciated as a villain, old foe Cahontas. She has had some of the worst ideas in recent governmental history, and she's had another terrible, terrible one. It was $15 million stuck into the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, speaking of jokes, and $15 million in that colossal, what was it, trillions, one point whatever, I don't even remember. The amount of money being thrown around is so mind-boggling you can't comprehend it, much less remember it. But anyway, $15 million wasn't noticed at all. She had stuffed in there $15 million to study if the IRS could prepare tax returns for taxpayers. So you would just give the government all your money and they would spit back a final tax return, non-negotiable, non-disputable. If you're thinking, what the hell? Who would sign up for that? Well, you're right. Nobody would. Nobody wants to. But the IRS dove right in and built a prototype program before it even released the required independent study from a liberal think tank that was going to justify it and explain how it would work. So they went ahead and spent the money before they did what they were supposed to do. A pilot program for 19 million taxpayers in a dozen states went live just this past March. To quote the Wall Street Journal editorial board, so far it's a bust. The IRS predicted several hundred thousand would use direct file, but as Monday's tax deadline approaches, sources tell us the IRS has accepted not several hundred thousand, but fewer than 60,000 returns via direct file, which is like 3/1,000ths of a percent of the eligible pool. until this week. This week, the agency had failed to enable users to import crucial details to validate their returns before filing. So it was one of those computer apps programs where it says, now bring figure four over from this line or whatever, or upload this document. And you couldn't. It would error out. Can you imagine the frustration? They point out that the U.S. tax code has long been an honor system in which Americans prepare their own returns, subject to IRS review and audit. Tends to keep most of us in line. But progressives want to give the IRS power to present taxpayers with non-negotiable tax bills. The direct file pilot was aimed at simple returns, but the goal eventually is to include even complex, multi-layered, business-related returns, too. The IRS would be able to veto deductions or credits up front. And good luck appealing, because the IRS is the judge. And also, I have a very strong feeling that, you know, you'd say, hey, I think this is a legitimate deduction. You would be in a pool with 730 million other objections from all the taxpayers, and it would take years to adjudicate if they get to it at all. Anyway, back to the Journal. Senator Warren is selling Direct File as an alternative to the, quote, greedy, reckless tax preparation firms. I would be sunk. We would be sunk without our accounting guy, since our returns are pretty complicated. But I have not found them greedy nor reckless. But reading on, it's a scandal the tax code is so complicated it requires such help. But that's the fault of Congress. As we've said many times, If you were to get a bunch of scholars and thinkers together and say, all right, I want you to brainstorm a tax system for us. It's a big country. We'll say like 340 million people, some rich, some poor, big, geographically diverse. Dream up a tax system for us. If one of those experts came back with the current tax system, they would be immediately incarcerated in a prison for the criminally insane. Because our tax system is criminally insane. But again, that's Congress's fault. And the idea that the IRS gets to process my taxes for me is obscene. So, getting to the important part, scrolling down because we're out of time. The IRS says it budgeted $114 million for its direct file pilot in fiscal 24. This is a terrible system that doesn't work and nobody wants. Keep that in mind. That's $1,900 per pilot return. The IRS last spring estimated the annual costs of a government program would be between $64 million and $249 million. Can you imagine offering somebody a range of between $64 million and $250 million? It's quite a range. But a government accountability office report this week, it scored the agency for lacking any, quote, any documentation to support the underlying data analysis or assumptions, and that it could eventually be more expensive than healthcare.gov, which costs taxpayers $21 billion. Just insane. Your government at work, Elizabeth Warren, thanks so much for the idea. I think we're going to pass. The internal war at the New York Times and much, much more of the news of the day, the issues we're all talking about, coming up. Stay with us.
Armstrong and Getty.
Greetings, friends. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hope you're well. Or if you're not, hope things are improving. Some of these things are so obvious to see coming down the line. The woke generation and their being indoctrinated. And again, you can't blame kids. They didn't raise themselves. They didn't educate themselves with this idea that there is one point of view that's acceptable and any others are evil. The people who are advocating any other point of view are racists and colonizers and transphobes or whatever point of view. I was just, as an aside, I was just touring a law school with my youngest, who is going to be attending one or another law school in the fall. They have a series of debates that are dedicated to the idea that people can learn from each other when they disagree. They can respectfully exchange ideas, test each other's ideas, question each other, but civilly. And not going after people's motives, or like in that infamous and stupid and ugly debate between Douglas Murray and Matt Taibbi on whether why you should not trust the mainstream media. And Michelle Goldberg of the New York Times and Malcolm Gladwell were on the other. And Taibbi and Murray were absolutely mopping the floor with them. To the point that the mostly young people are in the audience went from like 60-40 against Murray and Taibbi to 70-30 for them by the end of the debate. And it was glorious to watch if, like them, or like me, you believe that the mainstream media has become utterly biased and activist, which is so obviously true, it feels silly even bringing it up again. But the point is, about two-thirds of the way through that debate, as they were getting the floor mopped with them, Goldberg and Malcolm Gladwell, who I used to enjoy, went to the race card, and it was bizarre. I mean, it was like weird. Like, you couldn't even follow exactly how they got there, but that's the last refuge of scoundrels. And so, you know, they started calling the other two guys racist, and they were sincerely, our guys, my side of things, were sincerely baffled as to what the hell they were talking about. But if you are steeped in a culture in schools and universities where you are taught that there's only one acceptable opinion, you will resort to angry name-calling if somebody brings up facts, logic, data, wisdom that runs counter to the way you see things. And the New York Times is in a hell of a battle because journalism schools are left at Trotsky right now. So you got a bunch of young, you know, kids steeped in this culture of one side and one side only. They've been taught that journalism is activism. The only reason to tap on a typewriter or a keyboard, I guess, is to try to change the world for the good, for the neo-Marxist cause of critical theory this and DEI that and the rest of it. And so these publications are trying to run their businesses with these woke Red Guard nut jobs, you know, filling a lot of their jobs. So anyway, apparently at the New York Times, which again, and I know depending on who I'm talking to and our fabulous audience of great folks, some of you just despise it and can't even stand the name of it. I will tell you, when they're not being biased, they do brilliant journalism. Now, granted, they're biased a lot, but it's a big enough organization, they can pay somebody to go off for a year and report on, say, Big Pharma and the way they got so many people addicted to opioids knowing that it's dangerous. And we need that sort of journalism. So, you know, I'm not a big New York Times honk, but I don't dismiss them completely, even as I mock them for their bias. Anyway, so they've got this big crisis going on right now because the reporting on the war in Gaza has so angered a lot of their woke youngsters that they've started revolting and leaking internal information to other news organizations. And that's a big no-no. I mean, can you imagine? Maybe you can, maybe you can't. I guess because I'm in the business, I can. But you're working on some big, giant, long-term, expensive story. For instance, and this is the key story that this is all about, you may remember, because we talked about this, how Hamas weaponized sexual violence in the October 7th attacks on Israel. The New York Times did some great, serious journalism, sending many reporters over to Israel to talk to victims about the systematic rape and sexual torture of the poor Jewish women in Israel, and children in some cases. It's unspeakable, and I'd rather not speak about it, but it's there, and we need to reckon with it. Anyway, some staffers questioned the reporting behind it and alleged that the suffering of Gazans isn't getting the same attention. Times leaders said just last month they stand by the reporting, but the probe was meant to find out who leaked information related to the planned podcast episode about that article. So you've got woke staffers trying to undermine the paper mid, you know, doing the job. The intensity and scope of the internal probe suggests the Times leadership, after years of fighting with its workforce over a variety of issues involving journalistic integrity, is sending a signal. Enough. Quote, this is an executive editor at the Old Gray Lady. The idea that someone dips into that process in the middle and finds something that they consider might be interesting or damaging to the story underway and then provides that to people outside felt to me and my colleagues like a breakdown in the sort of trust and collaboration that's necessary in the editorial process. I haven't seen that happen before. Well, yeah, they're cherry picking parts of the story, saying this isn't good, this isn't right, and floating it to other news outlets so they can stab their colleagues in the back. We're going to be dealing with a lot of this going forward in America. Perhaps you are in your workplace already, but I want to move on to CNN. This is some great writing by Andrew Stiles in the Free Beacon. The headline is "A Mostly Peaceful Castration. CNN Eulogizes a Terrorist." And this had flown under my radar screen. I may have seen the headline. I didn't pay attention to it. CNN has done it again, folks. This time, instead of celebrating the mostly peaceful rioters who are hurling Molotov cocktails for racial justice, the esteemed news network has published a nice little eulogy for a terrorist. Here's how CNN reported the death of Waleed Daqqa. Quote, "Terminally ill Palestinian prisoner dies after 38 years in Israeli custody." That was only slightly better than Amnesty International's description of Daqqa as, quote, "a 62-year-old Palestinian writer whose death in prison was a cruel reminder of Israel's disregard for Palestinians' right to life." This writer and prisoner, I don't recall hearing his name. Perhaps I can remind you of who CNN is eulogizing. Several paragraphs later, CNN explained that Daqqa was, quote, "seen as a terrorist." Seen as a terrorist. Interesting. "After his conviction for orchestrating the 1984 abduction, torture, and murder of a 19-year-old Israeli soldier named Moshe Taman. Indeed, that doesn't seem like an entirely unfair characterization given the horrific details of the case, which did not appear in the CNN article." And I quote, "Waleed Daqqa," brace yourselves, this is not for the kids. Quote, from the Times of Israel in 2023. After Amnesty International demanded the terrorist be released from prison, quote, "Waleed Daqqa and his collaborators gouged out Moshe's eyes and cut off parts of his body, including castrating him. Lastly, they took him still alive to an olive grove and shot him dead. His corpse was left there to be found." As a result of his role in the ghastly murder, CNN explained, Daqqa had become, quote, "a symbol of the Palestinian struggle for liberation from Israel." We could probably just stop right there. Daqqa's admirers presumably included some of the current and former CNN journalists who have publicly denounced Israel and praised Hamas terrorists. CNN published the eulogy several hours after its correspondent Omar Jimenez, best known for reporting live from the mostly peaceful riots in Kenosha, Wisconsin. This is the very guy who uttered that phrase. He wrote a widely mocked post on social media about the death of a Chicago man who allegedly opened fire on police officers. And I quote, "How did a traffic stop for not wearing a seatbelt end with 96 gunshots, an injured officer, and a dead 26-year-old? The CNN reporter wrote, "Some say it was because Dexter Reed fired at officers first." Some say? You start shooting a gun at cops, what do you think's going to happen? But CNN goes on, "As the investigation shows, some believe the stop never should have happened in the first place." So if I was teaching a journalism class right now, and I'm not, I would trot out those two examples of how the push and pull of activism and what some people call both sidesism are at war. The idea that you would describe the Daqqa monster as a writer and symbol of Palestinian activism and leave out the details of why he was in an Israeli prison is an obscene miscarriage of journalism. It's indefensible as journalism. But then when a felon opens fire on cops from close range and they shoot him, CNN suddenly rediscovers its need to air both sides of the dispute. One of the sides being, hey, they shouldn't have pulled him over. Other than pointing out how awful, sad, sinful a lot of our journalism is today, I don't know what to make of it. Probably worth mentioning that CNN and other mainstream media companies have struggled mightily to attract viewers since Donald Trump left office in 2021. They're laying off people like crazy, and they are desperately trying to find an audience. Evidently, that audience is pro-torture and murder and terrorism. That's the only thing I can take from this. Anyway, well done, CNN. You're unbelievable. More to come.
Armstrong and Getty.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you, here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you on our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun, and I can't wait for you to hear it.
Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much for being here. It's the Armstrong and Getty Show. Behind the scenes, we're having a bit of a digital age meltdown, and the guys are making a heroic effort to keep us on the air and functioning. So if things seem a little different or weird, that's why. But, man, we have a great crew, and they're working like crazy. Meanwhile, Jack, my co-host, is ill and away, at least temporarily, which is a heck of a Friday, but it's fine. It's fine. I've had three young children under my roof and was barely able to pay the bills. That's pressure. This isn't pressure. This is fun. Thank you for joining us again. This study just came out telling us what I think we already knew or should have. It's a large scientific review that went through reams of data and many other studies that confirm the benefits of physical touch. Skin-to-skin contact for people. And if anybody wants to make, you know, obvious jokes about sex or whatever, go ahead, get it out of your system. I think this is a key aspect of what we're talking about a lot these days, and that is the, and this is so true, especially for kids, oh my gosh, as their brains are being formed, kids and adolescents, teenagers, whatever, as we've transformed their lives from a physical world to a digital world. from being in a room with friends, slapping a back, high-fiving, hug, whatever, to just texting each other. I think this is fundamental to some of the damage we, society, big tech, whatever, has done to kids. And I think it's a lot more than this. And I'll get back to the study in a second. But I just think being in a room with somebody physically is different fundamentally in our animal brains, our need for fulfillment. We can get it like 2 times more, 5 times more, 1,000 times more when we're physically together than just on the phone. And on the phone's 20 times better than texting once in a while. And I'm guilty of that with my own kids. Oh, I need to talk to my son, for instance, who were texting the other day. It's better than nothing, right? But it ain't better than talking. And talking ain't better than being with them. Anyway, I just think we human beings need that. We're designed for it. Back to the study. Whether a hug, a handshake, or a therapeutic massage, or a newborn lying on mother's bare chest, physical touch can buoy well-being, lessen pain, ease depression and anxiety, according to a large new analysis of published research released just this week in the journal Nature Human Behavior. I mean, that sentence I just read, it can buoy well-being, lessen pain, improve depression and anxiety. I mean, if there were a drug like that, whatever big pharma company came up with it would be printing money. That drug is human contact. Researchers from Germany and the Netherlands systematically reviewed years of research on touch, strokes, hugs, rubs, whatever you want to call it, massage. They also combined data from 137 studies, which included nearly 13,000 adults, children, and infants. Each study compared individuals who had been physically touched in some way over the course of an experiment, or had even touched an object like a fuzzy stuffed toy, to similar individuals who had not. For example, one study showed that daily 20-minute gentle massages for 6 weeks in older people with dementia decreased aggressiveness, reduced the levels of stress markers in the blood. Another found that massages boosted the mood of breast cancer patients. One study even showed that, well, and anybody who's dealt with a serious health problem knows that your optimism and your energy play an enormous role. One study even showed that healthy young adults who caressed a robotic baby seal. Well, wait a minute. Where do you get a robotic baby seal? Which researcher's idea was, hey, we could try a robotic baby seal. I don't want to get hung up on it, but what? Anyway, those folks felt less pain from a mild heat stimulus. They get in the particulars of the experiment. Less pain from a mild heat than those who read an article about an astronomer. Again, what were you smoking when you decided, let's figure out what makes people feel better, caressing a robotic baby seal or reading about an astronomer? What the hell? Anyway, I don't want to get distracted because this is important. And this is the most touching part. It brings a tear to my eye. I don't know about you. Serious positive effects were particularly noticeable in premature babies who massively improve. That's the quote from the study. Massively improve with skin-to-skin contact, said a neuroscientist in Sweden who reviewed the study for the journal. Quote, there have been a lot of claims that touch is good, touch is healthy, touch is something we all need. But actually, nobody had looked at it from this broad bird's eye perspective. We're running low on time. They mentioned that women seem to benefit a bit more from touch than men, which isn't that surprising. Men tend to be more isolated animals or independent animals than women do because the way we're made, and it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. It's the way God intended, or nature, or whatever, and it's fine. We'll post this article at armstrongandgetty.com under hot links. There's a lot more to it, but boy, howdy. Being there physically with your children, your loved one, your friends, just if you take nothing away from this but that, take that away and let's try all of us to be better at it.
Armstrong and Getty.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential.
We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.